أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وروح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. فلما أن جاء البشير ألقاه على وجهه فارتد بصيرا، قال ألم أقل لكم إني أعلم من الله ما لا تعلمون. We're discussing verse number 96 from Surah Yusuf. At this stage of the story, this is the good part, the happy part. Ya'qub alayhi salam was patient for so many years and did the right thing for so many years till finally his boys came around. They ended up turning back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They ended up meeting or making up with their brother. They're now coming back and they're providing him with shafa actually. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. They came back, and actually what happened was that they brought the shirt of Yusuf with them. When they brought that shirt, they cast it on their father's face, and miraculously his sight returned. Before he was blind, now with this, then now he can see again. And he tells them that, did I not tell you before that I know from Allah that which you don't know? The lesson that we were trying to get out of this, and what we were talking about, what we started talking about yesterday, and what we're going to continue talking about today, is the idea of, in order for us to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of the time, to make sure that our own Iman is strong, and the next generation is even stronger, the effort that all of us have to make, and by the way, this talk is not for the elders, or only for the youth, or even for the children, everybody. What we all need to do is that we need to make strong Muslim families. Having strong families are one of our strongest lines of defense. When we discuss strategy and we say, well, how is it that we can defeat our enemies and keep the faith of this generation, make it so the next generation is even stronger, hasten the reappearance of the Imam? We want to talk about practical steps, and one of them is having strong Muslim families. People who are proud to be Muslim. We talked a little bit yesterday about the responsibilities that the husband and wife had towards one another. Now I'd like to mention a new set of responsibilities. But again, this talk is not only for the elders. Some of us will be parents later. Some of us right now, we're children, right? We're in a family where we don't have the responsibility of actually leading the family in that way, but we still have a responsibility in pushing everybody towards the right direction. Now, the verse I'm about to recite reminds us of this heavy responsibility. Inshallah, tonight, if Allah gives tawfiq, we will discuss one of the martyrs of Karbala. Inshallah, we will be discussing the martyrdom of Ali Akbar. So Ali Akbar is the result of Imam Hussein performing this Islamic responsibility. For us, though, when we hear these stories, the story of Ali Akbar, the pain of his father, how much he felt for him, we don't think of these things as fables or merely things that we recite with amongst one another in order to cry over. How can we create the next generation of Ali Akbar? When we're raising our children, we're spending 20 years of our lives trying to get these guys ready. Our dream and our hope is that these children who we raise and make righteous children will be the Ali Akbar of the Imam of the time. We're hoping they become Shaheed. That's a big difference. If you tell this to a Westerner, they might run right out of the masjid. What? You want raise your child so they become Shaheed? Well, our dream is to be able to offer ourselves and our children as ransom. Right? We say that we be sacrificed for you. That's how much love we have for Ahlul Bayt. Of course, everybody doesn't become Shaheed, right? Especially for the 12th Imam. Not very many people. It's going to be a victory, right? It's not like Karbala. We're going to take over. So, you know, you got to fight for the few spots that are there, right? You really want to be one of those people? Brothers or sisters, right? There are some sisters who have that goal in mind. They raise their children in that way. They push their husband in that way. Some sisters also are granted martyrdom, right? And there's some fathers also in the same way. Some children have those aspirations. Some youth have those aspirations. So now, the verse that I want to recite to remind us of this responsibility, this heavy responsibility that we have, is from Surah number 66. So Surah Tahrim, and it's verse number 6. What does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tell us in that verse? He says, Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, Qu anfusakum wa ahlikum nara, wa quduha an-nasu wal hijara. That you, O you who believe, protect yourselves and your families from a fire. The fuel of that fire are people and stones. So it's not enough that, inshallah, we came here, we survived, we made it, we practiced. That's not enough. What about my people, my family, the next generation? What have I done for them so that they survive? Right? Two responsibilities. I have to protect myself from the fire. I also have to protect them from the fire. So one side from that verse is almost like a threat, right? That Allah warning us that how terrible that fire is and then telling us we have that responsibility. It's also an opportunity, though. It's also an opportunity. This time that we have with our children, sometimes we don't recognize what gems we have at our disposal. There are times when people don't recognize what they have. Other people get it for them for cheap. This is a bad example, but you know me, I give bad examples. They said once, this guy saw a sign that said, talking dog for sale. Talking dog for sale. So he goes over to the house, looks behind the house, and he sees there's a sign there. There's a little black mutt over there. He goes over to the mutt, and he starts talking to it. He said, can you talk? The dog said, yeah, 100%. He said, what's your story? He said, well, I discovered my gift when I was very young. And I wanted to help out the country, so I told the CIA about it. And then they would have me going all across the world. I would go in. Nobody would suspect anything. A little dog going in the room, talking presidents, ambassadors, people would be telling their secrets. I'd collect that information, and then I'd go back and I'd give that to the government. And then what happened? Well, then after about 8 years of service to the country and winning awards, these things, I got a little tired of it. So I figured I'm getting old. What I'll do is I'll help out with airport security. So again, nobody would notice a little dog running around here and there. I was able to just uncover plots. All kinds of things were happening. Won a bunch of awards. And finally, I just got married, settled down, had a bunch of puppies. The guy was amazed. He went over to the owner. He said, how much for this talking dog? The guy said, $10. He said, $10? The dog can talk. He said, yeah. He's a liar. He didn't do any of those things. So people don't recognize what they have at their disposal. Right? Sometimes we, even as parents, might not know what it means. You know what the Urafa tell us about our children? They say you might be, right? Words that are similar to this, raising the next Imam Khomeini. Right? All of us have the potential. Inshallah, we'll look at the ahadith where we talk about the potential of the human being for growth. Brothers and sisters, let me read you some of the ahadith about children, the value of children, these people who we have at our disposal. Who Allah has placed as amanat for a brief amount of time, but we definitely want to make sure that we have a plan for them. Well, let me read one of the ahadith. This first one is from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says, "Al-waladu salih rayhanun min rayahin al-jannah." A righteous child, a religious child, if we were able to raise one of our children to practice, to believe in Allah, then this child is a flower from the flowers of paradise. A flower from the flowers of paradise. As you know, there's more thawab for being a Muslim here in Canada than there is for being a Muslim back home. There's more thawab for you in practicing Islam and being proud and not apologizing and not running away and not backing down here than in the Islamic Republic, for instance. Here, is more reward for you than when the imam returns. The amount of thawab you get for each and every salah is more now than you're going to get when the imam returns. Why? Because it's so much easier then. When Islam is victorious, when the flag of Islam has been raised everywhere, right? Of course, we're going to work for that. We want to see that. We want to see everybody be able to make it. But the ahadith, when they talk about praying, the rewards for praying, when you don't have the imam with you, when he's not present, 25 times the reward for praying in his absence, when you're alone, when you don't have your imam there to protect you, right? So right now, the reward of what we're doing, the reward of raising children, if we place importance on them. So the hadith tells us that each one of these children, right, each one of these little soldiers of the imam, they're a flower from the flowers of paradise. We've also learned from the ahadith of Ahlul Bayt that we should be focusing on them. When times are difficult, when others are abandoning the religion, our strategy should be that this generation, the next generation, we've learned from the hadith of the imam, that if the spread of tashayyu is slow, and right now it's not at the way we would like to see, that it's spreading like wildfire, no, it's slow. Then he said, focus on the youth. Alayka bil ahdath. Right? We covered that. So now, my question is, so what's the plan then? What plan do we have? How are we going to raise these Muslim children? Have we read books on it? Right? These are the children, they're at our disposal. Have we read books on how to raise our children as Muslims? Have we had seminars? Have we requested from the scholars, if you're going to come, then please, Shaykh, Sayyid, whoever is coming, that seminars, that we have seminars and that we were exposed to some of the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt on raising children. You've heard some things from a distance, right? You've heard, for instance, that we have a special plan for the first 7 years. Then we have another plan from our hadith for the next 7 years. Another plan for the third 7 years. But how much of that have we studied? If a couple is getting ready to get married, right? The same way that we had advised, before you get married, have someone sit you down, a sheikh, a sayyid, somebody to go over and explain to you what are Islam's rules for couples. How can we have a successful marriage? What is it that we need to do? Right? The same way, before we get children, we want to know some of these rules. How is it that we're supposed to do this? What is the plan? Is there a plan? Right? Sometimes people seem to be raising children as they did back home. Right? I saw how my parents raised children. Right? How they taught us religion. That's how we're Muslims now. It worked back there, so it should work here. It worked back there, so it should work here. Inshallah. Inshallah. But for those of you who are coming from another country, coming here, well, keep in mind, how many competitors are there? Even if you are in Canada, even let's say somebody was a Muslim and practicing Islam, and they were here for a whole generation, right? And now they're looking at the next generation of children who are raised here. Life in Canada has changed. Let alone if you're coming from the Middle East. The number of competitors that we have now who are trying to work against us. Before, when was the internet there? To go over and to be having... When did everybody have cell phones? What were movies like then? What were schools like then? What were people's apparel like then? There's so many different factors that make the test and the challenge so much more difficult now. There's no way, even let's say the approach, the traditional approach that we had at home worked. We're now in a new environment. The idea of not preparing is something that is inexcusable. We can't do that. And of course, although it's more difficult now, there's again more reward. We have this again from Imam Ali. He tells us, he says that the greater the challenge, the more difficult the test, the greater the reward. So it doesn't mean that our approach then is everybody run back home. Save yourselves and your children. You've heard from that verse of Quran, leave. No, actually, we want to stay here and dig our feet in. Right here, make it happen. Right here, and we can. We have the ability to raise those children who will be the assistants and helpers of the imam here without running away. But of course, we've got to go back to our Islamic teachings. It's not enough, next thing to keep in mind, it's not enough even just to be religious or focused on religion, because that's another issue. That what is my highest priority? Was my highest priority to make sure my child was well off financially? That they were in a better situation, that they came here to Canada, so they had an excellent education? Was that my highest priority? I want to make sure that they, alhamdulillah, they're a doctor, a lawyer, whatever, right? Is that my highest priority? Or was more than anything, I want my children to die Muslims? If I'm preparing for the next 80 years for my children, but I'm not preparing for the next 800,000 years, how am I doing them justice? Right? Infinity. Where are they going to be for the rest of their lives? That same love that would make me make sure they have a good education and they're going to the best schools, that would automatically make me work harder to make sure that their education and their life in the hereafter is going to be somewhere that's safe. Some of these points that I'm saying, some of you aren't parents yet. You're not parents yet. Inshallah, you will be parents. When you're hearing some of this information on how to raise children, right? And some of it may not apply to you now. This is for the first 7 years. This is for this time, for that time. Even as brothers, as sisters, as siblings, we can encourage our parents. Not in front of the little kids. We're not going to correct them. Correct dad in front of everybody. No, but we take dad aside. We'll explain to him, or mom, right? The importance and the opportunity that we have at their disposal. What happens is sometimes when somebody is religious and they don't know what Islam's teachings are and how to implement Islam and how to train their children, sometimes the more devoted, the more mistakes. There are times, sometimes when you hear stories of how parents, for instance, there'll be parents and the child will be making salah, for instance. And when the child is making salah, they forget the number of rak'ah in the prayer. So dad's watching. And he says, you know, you only prayed 3 rak'ahs. And Isha is 4 rak'ahs. And the kids, well, you know, but I, you know, that's baini wa bain Allah, I think. No, pray again. They're real stories. Go over, I'm going to make the child learn Quran in the first 7 years. Right? Make the child learn Quran the first 7 years and insist that you're reading, and then the child resisting because the first 7 years Islam has another program, you're not reading Quran. You don't like God's book? Don't like God's book? Some people, they're saying they're getting their children up for Fajr in the morning. Get up, kafir! So these kind of approaches, that's not, like, Islam has instructions. We have ahadith, things to, right? So we want to be making sure that we know what these things are, what it is that Allah wants us to do, the right way to do it. How do we bring Islam to the next generation? What we want to have our children become Ali Akbar. How? So one thing to do is to make sure that we act on what we know. We have a hadith that tells us, if we do act on what we know, Allah will place that knowledge we don't have at our disposal. But part of that is, at least as the request that we have from our ulama, from students of the Hawza, is, can you arrange so that we have Islamic seminars where we learn how to train our children? The request, even from the mu'mineen. When the demand is there, then yes, the pressure will then be on the visiting scholar. Okay, well, let's set up a seminar. Let's study those things. The mu'mineen are asking for those things. So, by the way, the other day I was talking about the duties of husband and wife. One of the important areas that I neglected to mention yesterday, sometimes sisters are maybe unhappy with their husbands in this regard, is an active role for fathers in raising their children. Sometimes parents, and make sure this doesn't happen to the next generation, or even our current mu'mineen and mu'minat, that sometimes they feel, our sisters, that the father dumps the load of tarbiyah and training the children on the shoulders of the mothers. What do? I work. I bring home the food. I make sure there's lights and rent paid and these things. But I'm not actively involved in parenting. Not actively involved in parenting. Whereas Islamically, no, we want to see that actually we are actively involved in parenting. Inshallah, I'm going to mention the name of our imam. When I mention the name of the imam, please stand up out of respect and come forward. Qa'im ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala. Please come forward. If you can come forward a little bit. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Actually, this way is much better. If you guys don't mind, I much prefer when I can see eye to eye, I can see the enemy, the whites of the eyes of the enemy, much better. So, back to the story. What happens is, now because I'm trying to remind us of our responsibilities, I had mentioned before the idea that Islam had placed on the shoulders of our brothers, on the capable shoulders of our brothers, this responsibility to lead the family. Responsibility. Now, this responsibility, what happens? Well, one of the things that we're supposed to do is to make sure that we take the overall direction of the family towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The mother has a role. When we look at the ahadith, the mother has a role. The father has a role. But one of our duties on our shoulders, right? And sisters, you want to encourage your husbands to do these things. Right? Sometimes you will have a man and he's not that good at making decisions even, for instance. It might happen. Not you guys, me. Right? I'm not good at making decisions. So if my wife sees that when it comes to the overall direction of the family, where we should be heading, big decisions that should be made, she sees that actually that's not my area of strength. At the same time, she knows role reversal. Mom wears the pants in the house. That's not effective. That's not what's good. That's not what's good for the children. They need to see that their father is the major decision maker in the house. But she knows he has this weakness. He's not good at that area. And incidentally, she is. Incidentally, she is. Should she do role reversal? She knows that that's not the answer. What will she do for that husband? Right? The sister trying to push her family. She wants to protect her, herself, her husband, her family from the fire of hell. What will she do? She'll help him make decisions by laying things out on the table for him. These are your options. Option A, option B, option C. But instead of her taking over and making the decision, she'll point it out to him so we can clearly see which one of them is better and then say, you make the best decision. You're our leader. And he's, alhamdulillah, I'm the leader. Right? Sisters, you should know this. Brothers, can y'all not listen for a second? Men like to be managed. If their wives will do it in the proper way and be women about it, not be manipulative about it, but be women about it. Husband wants to go over and listen. Easy. So she can go over and she do that. But now back to us, right? So our job as men was to make sure that our family is moving in the right direction. We've got to be involved with the development of our children. Let me give you examples from some of our senior ulama. When the leader is describing Ayatollah Behishti, marhum, he passed away. He says one of the things about this individual was that he had an iron will. And he was very strict about the times that he would have for his family. Although he was involved in the struggle. It wasn't that everything is just my family and making sure they're successful. No, no. But he had time for his family. Right? He said one of the things about Shahid Behishti was that when you would have to meet him by prior appointment. You couldn't just walk in. You know, Ya Ali, we'll sit down, we'll talk. No, you'd have to arrange with Shahid Behishti. You'd call him and... He said, of course, once things got really, really difficult later in the revolution, there's so much on our shoulders. He said, even for him, he had to start compromising and just giving more time because the cause just demanded it. But a person was like that. You know what they say about Shahid Behishti? Sometimes you would call Shahid Behishti. Shahid Behishti, Ayatollah, speaks maybe 7 languages. We have something to do. You call him. What is he doing? He answered the phone. Right now, I'm doing my children's homework. Inshallah, we'll talk later. Click. Involved in the child's homework. The expectation for us as parents, as husbands, is not that, oh, I just put the food on the table, I make sure the rent is paid. No, even to that extent, we're going to talk about it later, a hadith about playing with your children, playing games, sports with your children. But anyhow, we'll get to those things. First thing, what's the first thing for us to keep in mind? The potential of our children for growth. Brothers and sisters, listen carefully. Little guys, listen carefully.
Okay? What is your potential? What can you do? What has God, because remember, we are the greatest of Allah's creation. Allah's favorite creation is the mu'min. What is our potential for good? This is what the hadith tells us. Now, I hope we can bear with this hadith Qudsi, right? So the words are from God, but unlike the Quran, the Prophet, or the Prophet, I assume, is over there explaining what this is. He says, Abdi, Allah speaking. Abdi, my servant. Ati'ni, obey me. Servant, obey me. What happens if we obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Hatta aj'alaka mathali. I'll make you like me. I'll make you, what does that mean? Right now, again, we're saying something. I'm saying it, I'm translating it for you. You're listening to it, right? Do we really know what this means? Let me the translation can't harm, right? What is he saying? When God's talking about the servants that he loves, right? And remember, brothers and sisters, we have this potential to manifest Allah's names. Our children have this potential. What does God say? When he loves a servant, kuntu sam'ahu alladhi yasma'u bih. I become his ears that he hears with. وَبَصَرَهُ الَّذِي يُبْصِرُ بِهِ I become his eyes that he sees with. وَلِسَانَهُ الَّذِي يَنْتِقُ بِهِ I become his tongue that he speaks with. Someone can be the manifestation of the sifat and the asma of Allah on the earth. This stuff is absolutely possible. Absolutely possible. People do things, you'd be shocked and surprised. How do you know these things? Where do you have this ability? There's one video for those who aren't scared. For those who aren't scared, there's one video, there's a video channel called Keys of Eternity or Keys to Eternity. And over there, there's a time when Sayyid Hasan Nasrullah is explaining, oh, I know you guys are scared, but it's okay, I'm here. Okay, we're right. So he's over there and he's explaining. He says that when we first started the resistance, he said we're a group of youth, ulama and youth, we go over to Imam Khomeini. And we say, he says, we're going over, you're our marja, kind of give us direction, tell us which way we should go, what we should do, right? And he said, Imam Khomeini said to us, you can listen to it yourself, right? Go into the video, listen to it yourself. He says that I see victory in your foreheads. He said, we were literally thinking, knowing what abilities we had and how powerful Israel was and these things, he said, we're preparing for mass shahada. Everybody go and become shaheed. And Imam Khomeini is telling us, I see victory in your foreheads. Right? Brothers and sisters, these abilities that we hear about our ulama, or even the shuhada. If I tell you some of the stories of the shuhada, you say, no, Shaykh, you're exaggerating. How could somebody? Some of them, even while they're still alive, the abilities that human beings have, we shouldn't think, let me get off topic for a second. Brothers and sisters, what you're watching right now is Islam, the pure Islam, taking on the forces of kufr. Right? They call it, right? They say that you have this Shiite belt or the Shiite alliance, right? Iran, and Lebanon, and Iraq, and Syria, and that you're going over and the most powerful forces in the world are trying to disrupt what you're doing, and they're not able to get you. Every time they go against you, mano y mano, you force them back. Right now, miracles are happening when you look at the situation. What are the enemy planning, right? I mean, just in the 2006 war, 5 years preparation, changed the Middle East. It's going to be a reborn. Everybody put all your energy in. 33 days, not able to go half a kilometer inside. These things are not normal, easy, right? But I want to take another lesson from it. What's the lesson? These individuals, why are they successful? Because they have the wilaya of Ali ibn Abi Talib. You and I also have the wilaya of Ali ibn Abi Talib. It's just that we're not applying ourselves. In school, in jobs, there's so much the potential we have to do good. Sometimes we don't believe it ourselves. We think that we're nobody, so then we don't achieve anything. Otherwise, brothers and sisters, what's the difference between, why did Allah choose the Iranians to have an Islamic Republic? Did he just, they were just a chosen race? No, we don't believe that. Whoever applies the principle, whoever. Right? Whoever applies the principles, I believe in Allah, I do it. You have the potential, it's there within you. Right? So anyhow, but let's not lose track. So, the first point to keep in mind was the potential of ourselves and our children for growth. Okay, next one is, okay, now when we want to do what our job is, we want to raise these children, because we learn from a hadith that every child was born on the fitrah. And it's the father or mother who changed them from that fitrah. Every child, another hadith, was born knowing who their khaliq is, who God is. Every child. Right? The parents later, they do their responsibility or don't do their responsibility and things change. Anyhow, now, when it comes to our responsibility, the Islamic system of tarbiyah, if we want to create our children, our awlad, be like Ali Akbar, a couple of points to keep in mind. The Islamic system of tarbiyah is holistic. You can't just take your favorite part of the deen and apply that and then expect results. We have to make sure we apply all of the religion. We're comprehensive. We're comprehensive. If not, if we only apply part of it, then we're not going to blame God because I'm not getting the results. No, all of Islam has to be applied. All of it. Now, let me give you some examples. One of the hadith that we have, very important, when they discuss our first method of tarbiyah of our children learn through us interacting with others and us interacting with them. Our children have been watching us from the time they were born, and they've been learning what values are. What does the hadith of Ahlul Bayt say? We have different hadith. One of them says, whoever sets himself up to be a leader of people, whoever has a circle of influence, this person's supposed to lead with their seerah before their words. We have other hadith that tell us that be inviters, invite the people, kunu du'atan linnas. Invite the people, even the Canadians out there, even the non-Muslims out there, even our Sunni brothers and sisters. How? بِغَيْرِ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ Without your tongues. That they should see from you. Salah, the hadith says. Okay? So what happens? In this first method of tarbiyah, very, very important, we have to make sure that we lead by example. Our children are watching us. What we do, what we say. God forbid, نَسْتَجِيرُ بِاللَّهِ I commit sin in front of my children. Commit sin in front of them. We have a hadith that say that if a sin is committed in private, it destroys the door of the sin. But if a sin is committed in public and nobody stops it, nobody says anything, it destroys society. If daddy commits sin, if mommy commits sin, sometimes parents will come over, they say that, my child won't listen, my child won't do this, Sheikh, what should I do, this and that and the other. So then, maybe I'll ask this question, that brother, sister, in your own personal life, do you do this haram or this halal? The person does it. There's a certain haram act that they do, that they've justified, that they've said is okay. So then what happens? What's the message? The message to the child is that it's not important. What's the message? Daddy or mommy pick and choose when it comes to religion. They have their favorite parts. They like salah. They like respecting the parents. But other parts of the religion, daddy has haram income. He knows he can't sell these things. Mommy knows there's some watcher and she just doesn't do it. Right? So if I'm going to be like, I'm picking and choosing now with religion. And then I'm telling the children, no, you pick, you follow the part of the religion I choose. Big mistake. We have to lead by example. Right? So this is something to keep in mind. Of course, there's a lot of discussion on this. What else? When you're leading by example, sometimes the message you intend, the message you would want the child to have, isn't the message that the child receives. You're doing an action. You don't think, you would never tell the child to do something, but they're watching and they're learning by what you do. Let me give you an example. I'll start with the brothers.
You come home as a father, right? When you come home and you come into the house and your wife is serving food, right? She's a good wife, she's serving food. Do you help serve the food? Do you help put food on the table? Afterwards, do you clean up the table when the food is done? Do you help bring chai, these things? Or you sit down, you're like me, you say, Bismillah, where's the chai, huh? You know what the message is? Mommy's a maid. The message is, don't help mommy. Mommy's a maid. The leader of the house, he comes in, he sits down, bring me my chai. So, did I intend that message? I would, if I heard my son say that, you know, like some of our African-American brothers back in the States, if a child does something really bad, they say, son, boy, I brought you in this world, I will take you out. They don't play. They will slap you right upside the head. The parent, the father, I would slap the son upside the head if he said this thing to his mother. Mommy's a maid? But what am I showing in practice? Do I help? Now the thing is, it's because we haven't been exposed sometimes to these teachings. But Imam Ali alayhi salam, and remember, now sisters though, when it comes to housework, when we come to the example of the Holy Prophet, the Lady Fatima and Amirul Mu'mineen, they go to Imam Ali. The Prophet said, inside the house for Fatima, outside the house for Ali. Right? So we don't honor us. We've been liberated. We're here in Canada. And we follow, we're Muslims. Mu'mineen, mu'minat. Right? But the example of the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salam was to help out with the housework. Ali. To the extent, I was reading the hadith for some of the brothers. They're like, Sheikh, no, that's impossible. Right? Like one of the hadith where the Imam Ali, he's like cleaning lentils. The Prophet comes in, Imam Ali is sitting there, Hazrat Fatima, Imam Ali. And so then he starts to say, Imam Ali, the only person who serves his family, somebody should, Siddiq and Shaheed and a man who, right? And then I start to read the other parts of the hadith, and the guys are telling me after that, Sheikh, come on, where, get these hadith. Yeah? But the thing is, so the example, so, but let's not lose the point. What's the point? When I'm leading my children by example, right? Doing what, sometimes the message I've intended isn't the message the child's getting. Now, we're running out of time, so I have to go over some things really quickly. We're going to have to cover some things later, okay? One of the things is to identify fitri needs of the children. Fitri needs of the children. The children have certain needs based on their fitra. And we want to make sure that every interaction that we have with these children is carrying a certain message. One of the great needs of our children is the message of love. Love. That they have that from us as parents, that we pass that on to the next generation. We make sure our children aren't love starved. We have a hadith that tell us, they say, love children. أَحِبُّ السِّيَامِ السِّبْيَانِ وَرْحَمُوهُمْ, and have mercy on them. Other hadith that tell us that Allah will love us because of how intensely we love our children. We want to make sure that every single interaction that we have with them is something that gives this message of love to the children. Every interaction. Now, we haven't talked about discipline and how we discipline. Is physical discipline allowed? At what extent? Is it a good idea even? Right? But in every interaction, I want to make sure that I'm giving across that message of love to my children. There's another one, and then we're going to have to end for tonight because we have to go to Karbala. This other message that we want to make sure is given to our children, so one was love in every interaction. Everything that we do with our children, whether old or young, that it reflects that love that we have for them, they're reassured of it. We tell them, we hug them. You, if you guys look in Nahj al-Balagha, look in letter number 33 from Imam Ali. And see the letter that he wrote to his son. See how much love and affection, right? Do we buy cards for our children as a parent? And just tell them how much we care about them. Do we go over and express this love? Do we hug them? Right? Is that a policy that we go over? Or we don't even, you know what? You're 18, get out of my face. Are we like that? The way of the Ahlul Bayt, even kissing their children. The way of the Ahlul Bayt. So again, we have to revive these Islamic traditions and make sure that we're doing these different things. Otherwise, when children end up love-starved, terrible things happen. But anyhow, we'll have to jump off of that for a second. One more hadith about, I think, the next message is respect. Respect. I mentioned the other day that one of the rights of our children, it's mentioned, it says, the right of your child, whether male or female, is that you respect the child's mother. If, God forbid, a mother is not respected, there are terrible consequences for the child. In addition to that, the child themselves needs to be respected. We have a hadith that warns us, what happens if a person has no sense of self-respect? I have no sense of self-esteem, no sense of value. What happens? I want to talk to you, because we're coming now to the Masa'ib, talk to you a little bit about the other side. What we are told to do is to make sure that we respect our children. What is the hadith? One of them is this. It says, Akrimu awladakum. Honor and respect your children. What else? It says, Wa ahsinu adabahum. Make sure that you teach your children good manners. What happens if you do this? Yughfar lakum. You'll be forgiven. What happens is, children who have been respected, who have learned not to be humiliated, not to be broken down, when you've taught them that there is no dhilla in Islam, you're not supposed to be dhalil and oppressed and humiliated, those kind of children are the children who, like the Imam Hussein on the day of Karbala, will say, Hayhat minna dhilla. That they can't take, we're not going to be humiliated. Whatever you want to do, you kick me out of the job, whatever you do, but humiliation, absolutely not. Whereas you guys know many times in the Western world, in the workforce, people take a lot of stuff from their bosses. Humiliated, embarrassed. The culture is about mocking people, making fun of them. Right? But the Islamic thing, even if I am the new person in the car, you're not going to humiliate me. You're definitely not going to intimidate me. Right? But how did I learn those things? Again, what does Islam teach us for those first 7 years that makes the person come out brave, strong, confident, able? But brothers and sisters, we have to go, inshallah, to Karbala. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Our lamp isn't working here. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Brothers and sisters, please recite these lines with me. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. Brothers and sisters, I have a recommendation. Maybe we should close our eyes, look down, and travel with the eyes of our heart to Karbala, because we're told in a hadith, if there is a mu'min, and this mu'min, dama'at aynahu liqatlil Hussein alayhi salam dam'atan, even if a person cries, so one tear rolls down their cheeks, bawa'ahullah biha ghurafan fil jannah, God will give this person rooms, spacious rooms in paradise. On the way to Karbala, the Imam had a dream. When he was going on the way to Karbala, the Imam had a dream. And he was on his horse and he woke up from that dream and he kept saying, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. And his son Ali Akbar was there and he said, Dad, why is it you keep saying, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un? He said, son, I had a dream, and in this dream I saw that we were going, this caravan was moving, and this rider was coming towards us. And the rider said,
coming to me from behind, the writer said that these people are going to meet their the death. They're going forward, and death is advancing towards them. And he said, I understood that these were our arwah and our souls telling us that we're going to die. So the father over there speaking to his son, going on this dangerous mission, telling him that we're definitely going to all become shaheed. The Ali Akbar said to his father, he said, may Allah not bring bad for you. He said, Alasna ala al-haq? Aren't we on the right way? The Imam said, of course we're on the right way. He said, idhan la nubali bil maut. We aren't concerned about death. We'll go over, we'll fight, and we'll die. And Imam Hussein was so proud of this young man. Allah had blessed him with a young man who looked just like his grandfather. To be old now, Imam Hussein, around 60 years old, and now you have a son who looks just like your grandfather, speaks like him, talks like him, has the akhlaq of him. We know that the companions of Imam Hussein, they refused to allow the Imam to sacrifice any of his companions while they were still alive. They said, first we die, and then after that you and your children, you go and fight in the way of Allah. But now all of the companions are dead. And they said, فَلَمَّا لَمْ يَبْقَ مَاهُ سِوَىٰ أَهْلِ بَيْتِهِ. When Imam Hussein only had the members of his household with him, خَرَجَ Ali ibn al-Hussein. Imam Ali Akbar came out to his dad. He sees there's nobody there to sacrifice himself. He wants to go sacrifice himself for the Imam of his time. So he comes forward. فَاسْتَأَذَنَ أَبَاهُ. He came to his father and he asked him permission. Now we know when Imam Hussein, when other people would go to ask permission from Imam Hussein, many times the Imam would say, no, you don't have to fight. No, don't sacrifice yourself. But when it came to sacrificing his own in the way of Allah, the Imam, فَأَذِنَ اللَّهُ. Immediately the Imam gave him permission. And Ali Akbar started to go out and face the enemy. It doesn't mean, though, that Imam Hussein doesn't have feelings. The Imam feels more than you and I. They said when the Imam saw his son, that proud, handsome son, marching toward the battlefield, he said, ثُمَّ نَذَرَ إِلَيْهِ نَذَرَ آئِسٍ مِنْ. The Imam looked at him with a look of despair and started to cry tears. He said these words, اللهم اشهد فقد برز إليهم غلام أشبه الناس خلقاً وخلقاً ومنطقاً برسولك. O Allah, bear witness against these people. This young man who is going out, he's a person who looks like the Prophet of Allah, who talks like the Prophet of Allah. His akhlaq is like the Prophet of Allah. He went towards them, facing the enemy, and he was reciting poetry. Ana Ali ibn al-Hussein ibn Ali. I am the son of Imam Ali, the son of Imam Hussein. And he went over reciting his poetry, and he began to go over and fight. And he fought a ferocious battle against the enemy. Then after that, he comes back to his father, bleeding, wounded. Father, are you proud of me? He knows there's no water in the camp, but still he comes back to his father. What's an excuse to come back, see my imam for one last time? He comes back, he says, Ya Abati, O father, Al-Atash qad qatalani, the thirst is killing me. Is there any bit of water that I could drink? The Imam starts to cry. فَبَكَ الْحُسَيْنِ. Imam starts to cry. He says, be patient. Go over, you fight. Your grandfather will give you water. Ali went back into the battlefield. وَجَعَلَ يُكَرَّ. He came attacking the enemy again and again, and he fought a ferocious battle until finally there are different accounts as to how he finally became shaheed. According to some accounts, when the enemy was hitting him from all directions, finally Ali fell forward on his horse. When he fell forward on his horse, the horse rushed blindly into the camp of the enemy, and the enemy began to chop him to bits with their swords. At this time, he called out in a loud voice, Ya Abata, alayka salam, hadha jaddi Rasulullah, this is my grandfather. And he went over, فَقَطَعُوهُ بِأَسْيَافِهِمْ إِرْبًا إِرْبًا. They started to chop him into pieces. When Imam Hussein heard this, then Imam Hussein mounted his horse. He came running over, riding over. He scattered the enemies from away from his son, and then he came back to the body of his son. They said when he was going back to the body of his son, he kept calling out these words, Waladi Ali, Waladi Ali, my son Ali. He came over and they said he threw himself off the saddle and draped his body over the body of his son. وَانْكَبَّ عَلَيْهِ وَاضِعًا خَدَهُ عَلَى خَدِهِ. He put his cheek on the face of his son. He wiped the blood off of his son's face. He said, يَا بُنَيْ قَتَلَ اللَّهُ قَوْمًا قَتَلُوكَ. Allah, kill those people who killed you. وَعَلَى الدُّنْيَا بَعْدَكَ الْأَفَاءِ. Death be on the dunya after you. They said that the Imam started to breathe deeply at this time, like the breaths of the person who's about to leave this world. Zainab sees the situation as very terrible. Her brother's over there. He can't bear this. Zainab, who never came out of the tent for her own son, Zainab came out. وخرجت زينب came out of the tent running وهي تنادي يا حبيبة يا ثمرة فؤادة yelling, shouting, running. She comes over, she sees Imam Hussein needs help. She comes over and she drapes her body on the body of Ali. When the Imam sees this, he starts to cry. He cries because of her tears. He says, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raja'un. He gets up, he takes her by the hand, and he tells the youth to take the broken body of Ali Akbar back to the tent. Allah la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen wa say'alamu al-ladhina dhalamu ayya munqalibin yanqalibun.